It's time for another episode of Leadership of the Leaf, now in their third season. More leadership topics to discuss and more cigar knowledge to share with great pairings. Grab a cigar, give it a cut and light, and put some smoke in the air with your host, Dice and Austin.
All right, welcome everyone to another episode of Leadership of the Leaf. My name is Dice.
And I'm Austin.
Oh, hey Austin, how's it going, sir?
It's going swell, my friend. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well.
That's good.
Episode 2, I don't think I acknowledged. Maybe I did. I'm not sure. But new intro.
Ooh, yes, new intro. Lovely, lovely intro.
All right. Well, how are we going to get started with this one? What do we want to talk about? What we're smoking, what we're drinking, what you're eating? You eating something?
Why the fuck? Okay. First off, I've eaten things while I've smoked. It doesn't really do any. It's been mostly popcorn, in fairness. Like movie night out on the patio, like popcorn, you know. But I don't really eat while I smoke. But first off, we don't need to know what the fuck you're drinking. It's Hennessy. Got it. Move the fuck on. But I want to know what you're smoking.
Wait a minute. Last episode, did I drink Hennessy last episode?
Dice, so we need to go over the numbers again?
Okay, fair enough. I am drinking Hennessy. It's VSOP. Uh-huh.
Yeah, all right, there you go. Got it.
It is VSOP this time.
Right? Already knew it. Is that coming as a surprise to anybody else? Anybody? Raise your hand. Nope.
All right, next episode is going to be different.
Yeah, sure, right. All right, what are you smoking, though?
Romeo y Julieta Reserva Real Twisted. And you can see it's a barber pole.
It is a barber pole. All right. So you're smoking a Romeo y Julieta Reserva Real Twisted.
Real nice. Twisted, yes.
Real Twisted. And it's a barber pole, which I like. That's nice. I like it. Yeah.
Let's see. What's the twist? Ecuadorian Connecticut Shade. Twisted with an Ecuadorian Habano.
Nice. All right. I can get behind that. And we already know you're smoking or drinking Hennessy. Nobody gives a shit anymore.
Everyone cares. Stop. People stop me in the streets. They'll be like, hey, Dice, what's up, man? What you got on that Henny, yo? And I can guarantee you that almost never happens.
I can guarantee that too. And I can also guarantee that people stop giving a shit what you drink.
Oh no, people care. They're like, what is he going to do with Hennessy this time?
What, you're one of three drinks?
What are you talking about? I did so much prolific stuff with Hennessy in season 2.
Sidecar.
What are you smoking, sir?
I am smoking a McAuliffe Riata. It's a San Andreas Sumatra wrapper with an Ecuadorian binder and Nicaraguan filler.
I like McAuliffe. I like McAuliffe because they are all for the brick and mortar. They are 100% a brick and mortar.
I was happy to see one, so I picked it up because I've never had a McAuliffe before, so I wanted to pick it up. And so far so good. We'll see how it goes.
And you're pairing that with?
So I went through my bar and, you know, new year, new me, right?
Okay.
So to get to a new me, I had to get rid of all the old shit that was at my bar. Right? That makes sense?
Okay. I think I like the way this is going. Let's go.
So I had a half drink, half drink? Full, half empty. Full.
Half drunketed.
One of those.
Okay.
Esprit de Cru Crystal Rums. So I'm pairing it with that.
Oh. All right. Yeah. Always like Esprit de Cru. Always give them a shout out. Anytime you drink it, shout out to them.
Yep.
Rollins Distillery.
Yes. Delicious.
Is it Rollins or Rollins?
Rollins.
So I had to write the first time. Go me.
You did. Go Dice. All right, Dice. What are our topics?
Well, for our cigar segment, I would just like to take a trip down memory lane and talk about some first-time cigar smokers, some newbies, whatever. Just some experiences that you and I may have talking with newbie cigar smokers.
All right. I like that idea. You know, I bet by doing that, we discovered some new ways to build trust.
Your segue, sir, is impeccable because our leadership portion is exactly about that. Building trust.
Fuck, I am so good. It's like I have notes.
I just love the building trust aspect of the leadership because I'm not going to say it's forgotten about, but it is one of the things that happens that you don't really see.
I would say it's an overlooked and potentially undervalued part of leadership.
I wouldn't say undervalued.
Overlooked. No,
overlooked.
We'll get into it.
Yeah. Yeah. There. Rubble. So let's talk about some new cigar smokers. You ever dealt with new cigar smokers?
I have. Yeah. Several of them, actually.
Well, throughout this segment here, I am going to share a lounge trip that I went on with a new cigar smoker.
It's story time from Dice.
Well, no. We're going to intertwine. I mean, they have never had a cigar before.
Period. Ever.
Period. Dot. End of discussion.
They smoke pipes, cigarettes.
We're in Vegas, sir. They smoked other things.
You got me on that one.
Okay.
Jesus.
But they heard I did a podcast about cigars and leadership, and they were very interested in smoking a cigar. So I was like, you know what? Let's go to a cigar lounge. So I picked out a cigar lounge and I picked out Cigar Box. Box is not directly on the strip. It's off the strip. It's not a fancy cigar lounge, but it's also not, you know, like Tobacco Leaf where you just go sit in the back.
Right.
They actually have drinks and stuff there, coffee. It's the cigar lounge. I'm a name drop here. The cigar lounge I met David Blanco in.
I'm so proud for you.
Thanks.
Did that feel good? Did that feel good?
That felt great. I sat down and had a cigar with... anyway, moving on. New cigar smoker. So what's the first thing you... A new cigar smoker. When you enter... For yourself, even. You enter a cigar lounge and you go in the humidor. What's your first thoughts?
Well, if they've never smoked cigarettes, pipe... or any of the traditional smokings, then I'm going to probably steer them towards a flavored cigar, like an Acid Blondie, or maybe one of the Sweet Bitches, you know, from Deadwood Tobacco. Probably something like that.
Well, yes. Yes, you're exactly in the right realm. But what would your thought process be of looking at a humidor? Like, you first walk in a humidor, you've never seen one before, you walk in and you're just overwhelmed with choices.
What are my thoughts, or what am I going to tell the new guy?
No, your thoughts, exact thoughts. When you first walked into a humidor, an actual real cigar humidor.
Years ago?
Yeah.
Fuck me, let's choose the closest thing to the door and get the fuck out of here, because I don't want to look like a loser.
Yeah, I was 100% intimidated, right? So yeah, I kind of wish someone like myself or you accompanied me in the actual humidor, right? Because, like, what the fuck? I'm looking at all this shit. I don't know what's what. These are dark. These are light. Why are these all the way over here by itself?
Is there a difference between top shelf, bottom shelf?
Right. Yeah. Just imagine picking up a fucking Asylum April Fool one.
Like, why is it so big? Do you sell dildos in here too?
What the hell is this? This monstrosity. So, of course.
Is this called the Black Mamba?
Yes, that's nailed it. It's called a Woody, sir.
Oh, does your depravity know no bounds?
No. So yes, you're absolutely correct with where you was going with before. I didn't want to steer the person to a Padron or anything
Right. Heavy. Well, you don't want to. Yeah, you don't want to go like, hey, you'll like this Gurkha.
like, yeah.
You know, awesome. Like, or hey, hey, I got this this Maduro for you here. Give that a shot. Like,
I know it says fuck? Triple Maduro, but you ate lunch, right? You ate lunch. You're good.
You like a Skiro? What? What? I don't even know what you're saying to me.
So, right. So, someone brand new to the whole thing, you don't want to scare them off. So, of right. course, you say something like three yummy bitches, three sweet bitches, something like that. They're, I like the sound of yummy.
Yeah. Sweet bitches? Is,
yeah. I like bitches. Woo. Anyway, so I did end up selecting for the individual, what is it? Leather Rose.
Okay. Leather Rose. Okay.
Because yeah, I feel it wasn't like too coffee, but it also wasn't too sweet, and it has leather notes in it, right?
Right, right.
So there you go, Fishy Price, my first cigar.
Yeah, there you go, there you go. I have talked with several new cigar smokers, and every single time I've talked with the new cigar smoker, they have already had their own cigars picked out. Hmm. And surprisingly enough, if they're really new, I think the few times I've talked with them, they're like, yeah, I really like acids. And I'm like, all right, got it. Let me look. Can I direct you next time you go to a humidor, look for this other brand and just branch out. Normally what I'll do is if they've been on acids, I'll direct them to like an M by Macanudo Java.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Something that's still semi-flavored, but is not overly sweet tipped, sugary, like I'm eating a breakfast cereal.
Right.
You know, it's something right. a little bit more mature, still flavored, so they're not just getting their like getting punched in the mouth going, hey, have you tried this Diablo? Or, hey, have you tried the Scent Compromiso?
That's a good one.
Scent Compromiso. It's delicious, but I would not recommend it to somebody new in the cigar journey. Right? Let's go with that.
Right. Cigar journey. I like that. Yeah. You're absolutely correct. And one thing I find, not fascinating. Fascinating is not the right word. One thing I find interesting is new cigar smokers, because I have talked to quite a few before, too. Is cutting a cigar. Something as simple as cutting a cigar can be intimidating or overwhelming to someone that's new, to the point to where I was explaining the cutting process. I was the three, of course, we was there. They had the three different type of cutters, and popular cutters, the punch, V-cut, and a straight cut. And right. I was explaining what each one kind of does when you get it, you know, once funnels it a little stronger. You know, I don't need to go over that whole technique. This isn't what the episode is about. The episode is about the new cigar smoker. So after I explained it and I cut mine with the V-cut, the person was like, you know what? You know, I don't want to mess this up. I understand everything you were saying. Could you cut mine for me? Not a problem.
That's fair ask. Yeah. I've had that same thing. One of the new cigar smokers, I had him over to my house. Mm. We're sitting on the back patio. We're drinking. We're talking. We're having a good time. And I see him grab his cutter. And I see him grab his acid. And he takes that thing and he mashes it down on top. And he starts to go cutting. I'm like, whoa, whoa, what are you doing? He goes, what? I said, all right. I'm gonna give you some knowledge here, right? So I had to talk to him about the caps, because he had no idea. And he's like, all these cigars, they keep unraveling in my mouth. I was like, that's because you're cutting too much of the cigar off. He had just a straight guillotine cutter, right? Seen it in movies, and in movies, they right. never do it right, right? They're like, cut like an inch off of the cigar. And they're like, he's like, that's what I thought I was supposed to do. I was like, got it. Let me teach you. So I had to teach him. I showed him the caps. And I was telling him everything. And once he got it, he was like, oh, I was like, so you just want to take that much off. And I cut it for him. He goes, that much. I was like, just try it. I said, if you don't like it, this is your cutter, right? He goes, yeah. I was like, then you can cut more off later on. He goes, fair enough. And so he tried it. And I was like, but he, as soon as he tried it, he loved it. But he was like, oh, I've done doing this wrong so long. And I'm like, so you almost got to have like a mentor to help you out with some of this stuff.
Some of the stuff, yeah. But in the same note, for like new, you don't like, you could easily be like, what are you, a fucking dumbass? You know, you don't want to like discourage. It's a cigar journey. So, I mean, you had to learn how to tie your shoes too, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't want to be a dick about it.
You're like, oh, you stupid. What? You've been smoking cigars for 3 hours? What's going on? So, yeah. So, you know, I don't mind that. So I was glad to help out. Even with the lighting ritual, you know, I presented the toasting aspect of it and how you want to get it started, and then puff on it just a little bit to make sure that it's fully lit. Unlike a lot of times when I'm lighting my cigar and you call me out when I'm lighting it on air here, and you're like, "Hey, buddy, you're not fully lit." And then I say,
"Go fuck yourself." I'm not calling you out. I'm trying to help you.
I say, "Go fuck yourself," and then I light it all the way, and you're like, "Okay, you're good."
I try to help you. That's me helping you.
Oh, it's not you talking shit.
You want a half lit cigar, motherfucker?
Well, I only light the corner of it to see if it, yeah, no, I don't want a half lit cigar.
Okay. So I'm helping you. So fuck off.
All the way?
All the way. Yeah, the lighting process is definitely something that you got to talk to with new people. Especially the toasting aspect. I don't know how many times I've seen people on the butane torch and they light it and they stick the base of it, like the flame, all the way to the base of their cigar. They're like, "Yeah, this is how I light my cigar." And I'm like, "You were burning like 3 inches off that motherfucking cigar, dude.
Right?
Stop." And I show it to him. I'm like, "Can I light your cigar? You can watch me do it and see how I do it. You can make your own opinions." All right. And I light it for him. I'm like, "This is great. I don't get that like that as ammonia taste in this fucking." I'm like, "Yeah, it's because you're not like overheating the tobacco." Oh, is that what I'm doing?
Wait, you can also have them stop like in the middle of lighting, stop, and then like show them the side of the cigar, and a lot of times it's going to have like a black soot line, like where the flame is just went up the side of the cigar instead of just
I was like that. Yeah. Second cigar normally, you know, because I smoke more than one 9 times out of 10, and I'm like, "All right, I'm not going to tell you how to do anything. You do your ritual, and I want to see what, you know, see if you can tell the difference." And they do their normal thing, and they're like, "This tastes like shit now." And I'm like, "It's the same cigar, right?" And they're like, "Yeah, what's the difference?" And that's when I get to go, "Well, see these black lines here? I see how burnt your shit is." I was like, "You didn't get that on the other one, did you?" Like, "No, that makes so much sense."
How it's burning uneven.
Yeah.
So I get it lit. We both get it lit. We're sitting down, and now comes a strenuous part. A part that is always nervous.
I got a puff puff pass.
How do I smoke this? I don't want to say veteran, but as a cigar smoker of many years, what do you mean? How do you smoke this?
How many puffs do I take?
How is that a question? So
you put it in your mouth.
I said, it's kind of like, do you drink wine? And of course they said, "No, I don't
Do you drink
wine.
Scotch?
No, I don't drink scotch. Have you ever did mouthwash before? I have done mouthwash. Okay. Oh, all right. So you want to puff, you want to pull in the smoke, but you don't want to swallow the smoke. You want to kind of keep it in your mouth like mouthwash and like wash it around your mouth. And then you want to kind of like just spit out the mouthwash, but instead you're allowing the smoke to exit your mouth. And it's like, I don't get it. I got it. I understand. It's okay.
Counterintuitive.
Try it. Just try exactly what I said.
Okay.
Did I do it right? Is that it? Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, there's been, I don't know how many times I've seen a couple guys that'll like inhale, and they came from smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
And so they'll like inhale, and they're like, and then they're like, "I hate these things. Cigars make me sick every time." And I'm like, "Are you inhaling the smoke?" "Yeah, well, yeah, that's what you're supposed to. How else is the nicotine going to get in your..." I'm like, "All right." Here's the problem with what you just said. Amazing. Every part of that sentence was wrong.
Well, once I got the puff part down, then I was trying to explain you don't want to pull on it like a cigarette as often or as other recreational activities that's done in Vegas. You don't want to pull on it like that. You want to puff on it every couple of minutes or so. You don't want to overdo it, but you don't want to underdo it. You got to kind of find your right. You got to find your, I call it your clutch moment. You know, every clutch is slightly different. So you got to find your clutch moment.
I usually tell people 30 seconds to a minute, you should have about a puff. About, roughly. And that's, and again, everybody's different. Everybody smokes at a different speed. Every cigar is a little bit different. Some burn faster, some burn slower. It's all different. So you got to kind of find what works for you. Speaking of how cigars are burning, are you in your first third?
I am definitely in my first third. And oh, this cigar is excellent, sir.
Excellent.
Excellent. Let's see. It started off with a sweet peppery kind of notes, and then some cashews, maybe pecans came in, I'm not sure. I'm trying to get that, and hints of cocoa there.
Nice. This one has been delicious so far. I get like caramel and coffee, which is awesome, because when I smell the foot of the cigar, I smelled barnyard and cedar. And as most of our listeners know, I'm not a huge, overly fan of a cedar cigar. But, so I was a little bit apprehensive. But no, it's caramel, coffee. And then I get like hints of like a baking spice or like black pepper on the back end. That's really good though.
Yeah, mine is definitely hit medium. How about yours?
I'll be honest. Medium is about the limit for this thing. I don't get a whole lot of strength off of this thing so far.
Okay.
I get the black pepper aspect on the back end. I get the retrohale. It's just, and it's full of flavor. The strength is, for me, is just not as strong. I think medium is probably about there. I don't think it's like a medium to full. I think it's mild to medium.
Okay, well, that's good, because that leads me to an important aspect that comes up with people that are new to the cigar game that are smoking cigars.
I only tap my cigar to get the ash off.
Right,
right on the edge, right?
Yeah. So the question that actually was asked was, okay, how do I ash it?
It's a fair question.
Fair enough. Let me just show you. So the Cigar Lounge had those big stinky ashtrays that are like a big basin, silver basin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I reached in near the curvature of the ashtray and just slightly rolled it until the ash fell off. And they were like, is that all you do? Like, that's it. You don't want to tap it on the edge. You don't want to shake it too much. You don't want to do anything. You don't want to damage too much of the leaf inside. It's burning perfect. So just roll the ash onto the curvature of the ashtray and it will fall off and you can do the rest.
Yeah.
Then I added, normally, I just smoke it until the ash falls on my shirt.
Yeah, because you a bitch.
Let's be honest. I mean, my kid laughed at me several times. You poke fun at me for it.
We've all had it happen, though. I mean, it. You know, you sit there and you're like, I'm gonna see how long this ash can hold on, and then like you go to puff and it just falls in your lap. You're like, fuck.
Well, that's how long.
Yeah, I had it happen to me at the lounge there in Vegas. If you remember, like, we were sitting there smoking, just having a good old time, and I was like, where'd my ash go? And I like looked down on the floor. I was like, oh, fuck, it's on the floor. Man, I'm an a-hole. Like, I went and asked the bartender, I'm like, you got a broom, like a dustpan real quick? They're like, why? What happened? I'm like, I didn't ash my cigar and it fell on the floor and I feel really bad about it. And they're like, oh, yeah, here you go. I was like, all right. I felt bad, man. Like,
what? Well, yeah, that's because that's your you.
Yeah. Yeah. The ashing of a cigar. Yeah. The people that I've talked to, they don't realize how fragile the wrapper is and how fragile the leaves are. I mean, these are dried leaves, but once you put it like to them, you're like, hey, this is a dry leaf that you're smoking. Like, go out in your backyard and crumple up a leaf. Like, oh, that's really fragile. Like, yeah, of course. This is slightly stronger than that. Like, oh, I definitely don't want to tap. Exactly. That's why the roll method works the best.
Correct. Or just let it fall off naturally.
Yeah. If you can let it fall off naturally, even better.
Yeah. That's not a problem. Not a problem.
You don't want stack dimes?
Stack dimes. Why is it called stack dimes? Why did you say stack dimes? Educate me.
Dice. Because when you get a long ash, if you notice, it looks like, if you were to hold the cigar upright, it looks like a bunch of little stacked dimes.
That makes all the sense now.
Would you rather me call it stack nickels?
I don't know. It's a new season. Maybe someone doesn't know what the fuck stack dimes mean. I knew what you meant. Come on. All right. What we went to a cigar lounge and it was lunchtime, so it was midday.
A midday smoke.
Yeah. So what do you think I paired it with? What do you think I paired it with? If you say Hennessy, I swear to God.
I mean, it's midday. I assume, was it a work day?
It was a work day.
Okay, all right. So you didn't pair it with Hennessy. So I'm going to say that you paired it with a caramel macchiato.
That was a very, very great guess. It was actually a cappuccino. They didn't do all the frou-frou shit there. Okay. They just did coffees.
I was going to say a coffee, but I didn't want to be too general with it. Right. I'd be like, I don't know, Dice. No, that motherfucker drinks caramel macchiatos, motherfucker.
Yeah, that's a true story. And if anybody sees and wants to purchase me a caramel macchiato, I will not turn it down.
Facts. Big facts. So yeah, you paired it with coffee, right? Coffee.
I paired it with coffee, yeah.
Probably the best midday drink.
Especially with the cigar choice that we had, it paired perfect with coffee.
Yeah, of course.
Leather Rose coffee. Absolutely wonderful. But of course, naturally, a new cigar smoker wants to know everything all at one time. So I was very general with some generic cigar pairings. And being someone that only drinks Hennessy, I was still able to talk intelligent enough of different pairings, for as like maybe lager with a slightly milder or Connecticut. Maybe you want to do a scotch with a Maduro. Like, however, there's so many different pairings. Cream soda with, a Robusta. Who cares? It's your pairing. You can do what you like.
You're welcome, by the way.
I'm welcome.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Obrigado.
Okay.
Doesn't that mean thank you?
Yes.
Okay. Why am I thanking you again?
Because all of your pairing knowledge most likely came from me, because all you drink is motherfucking Hennessy.
I have paired numerous cigars with different beverages many a time before.
So what else did you talk about?
You wait a minute. You act like this I only been smoking cigars for like a couple of weeks.
No. Okay. No.
Okay.
No.
No.
If that motherfucker drink Hennessy, that's what that motherfucker drink.
That's true. That's fair enough. One interesting aspect of smoking a cigar, they thought they were trying to be a little cheeky and say, hey, what flavors are you getting? Are you trying me right now? You asking me what flavors I'm getting?
100%. That's what they did.
Okay. So naturally, I answered flawlessly, of course, because I'm Dice. Answer flawlessly. I may be wrong,
but I doubt it.
Correct. So right, they weren't quite getting the same flavor notes, which I explained, you know, palates are different.
Right. But then, subjective.
But then I said, hey, try this technique. a technique that you have mentioned on air several times before. When you have the smoke in your mouth, in your palate there, chew like you're chewing food. Act like you're chewing something. Mm-hmm. And see if that helps.
Mm-hmm.
And to their surprise, it worked.
Like weird. A champ.
Yeah.
Weird. It's like, I know what the fuck I'm talking about.
It's like, oh, I get that now. Oh, I can get that. I don't know if they was just trying to be cool. Like, I got to do this to be cool. No, I don't know if they were doing that or not. But either way, they said it worked. They did it. I watched them chew air, chew smoke, which looks funny if you really look at it.
Oh, yeah.
But it worked. Hilarious. Yeah, it worked.
Yeah, yeah. It's because your body is conditioned to get flavors when you chew. So subconsciously, when you sit there and you do the chewing motion, your body's like, I should be tasting something right now. And you're a little bit more in tune with what you're actually tasting.
Right.
It's a mind trick.
Mind fuckery at its best, sir.
Hey. Yeah, I've had several people and I'm like, what flavors are you getting off that? They're like, I get sweetness. I'm like, yeah, you have a sweet tip cigar. What else are you getting?
Good job.
I don't know. I just smoke these to look cool. I'm like, chew it. Chew it. What do you mean chew it? Chew the smoke. What do you mean chew the smoke? Put the smoke in your mouth and chew. Whoa, that's different. You're welcome. I opened up a whole new world for you.
Yeah, you can just buy me a cigar. Thanks.
A whole new world.
Please. Oh, my God. What's wrong with you?
What? I stopped?
Thank you.
I hate you.
Yeah, I know. So one thing I pointed out as we were enjoying our cigars is how relaxed they were.
Yeah.
How relaxed are you now? How relaxed are you before and then? How relaxed? Then that's when they thought and was like, you know what? I am relaxed. I was like, what was going on today? You know what? I don't really know. I'm just concentrating on puffing on the cigar correctly. I want to make sure I get the notes and everything. I'm not exactly. Once you cross that threshold and you light one of these bad boys up, your worries kind of subside. You're kind of like, meh. Unless you need to ponder on something. Other than that, you're really just like, you know what? I'm here to relax. This is cool. I like this.
You know, it's funny. It's kind of funny you say that because there's been a lot of times where I tell the wife, I'm like, I need to go out and smoke a cigar. I got some stuff to think about. And she's like, all right, go outside and smoke a cigar. So I go out, I smoke a cigar. I come back in. She goes, how was your thinking session? I was like, my what? She goes, your thinking session. I was like, ah, shit, I was supposed to think about some stuff out there, wasn't I? Because did you not do it? That was the whole reason you smoked a cigar. And I'm like, hey, fuck that. Once I light that cigar up, all thoughts go out the window. I don't think about shit.
Right.
I just focus on the cigar, how good it is, what I'm pairing it with, the flavor notes. I was like, all the other bullshit that I worry about, it don't even exist no more.
It is gone. It is gone. By this time we was near the end, so now it comes to the question of what do I do with what I have left? What do I do with the rest of the cigar?
Dab it out like a cigarette.
Dab it. That's exactly what I told them.
I bet.
And then we left.
You dick.
Did not do that. I said just leave it. What do you mean? See that?
Put
ashtray?
It in the ashtray and leave it.
And walk away. And let's go. That's it. Yeah, that is it. We're good.
They're gonna take that whole cup of an ashtray. They're gonna dump it into a trash can. They're gonna put the ashtray back down. They might wipe it out with the towel if they care. And then they're gonna go on to the next ashtray.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what they did. I saw that right before we was leaving out the door. And when we got to our cars, they said that was amazing. I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah.
I was like, I know. Not a problem. Whenever you're ready, my friend, we can do this.
Welcome to the wide world of smoking cigars.
I was like, life has now changed forever.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been a couple times where I've talked with new guys, and they tend to overthink. Probably because nobody has showed them. So they tend to overthink. So once I start showing them, like, hey, this is what you need to do here, and this is what how this should happen, and blah, 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 they start kind of like relax. I see them start relaxing, kind of hanging out, chilling a little bit more. And then, you know, I ask them after the end, I'm like, hey, how was that versus your normal smoking experience? Like, that was, man, I've been smoking wrong all these years. I'm like, yeah. It's amazing what happens when you let your mind just kind of go. When you just sit there and you don't think about everything, when you you just get in the moment, you get in that meditative moment and you just chill.
Yeah, I notice, not with the person I smoke with, but I've noticed with other like newer people, when you're like for the first time, they talk louder. They're like more anxious with their voice, and it just carries like so much. Mm-hmm. And then after, like you said, you kind of educate them and train them, and then their puff control is down and everything is going right. They're not talking so loud anymore.
Yeah.
They're just like their shoulders are a little more slumped now. They're, you know, they're not gripping the steering wheel like a teenager learning to drive anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing what happens when when people actually learn how to relax and let go. There's a conscious effort to actually de-stress when you have to focus on other things, like what the second, third of your cigar tastes like.
That is a phenomenal question, but I cannot answer it right now.
We need to go to break.
We need to go to break.
All right, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll find out what Dice's second, third tastes like. Have you ever wanted to suggest a new leadership or cigar topic to your favorite podcast?
I would like to, but I don't think they would listen.
Well, that's not the case with Leadership of the Leaf.
Really?
Yeah, only thing is you need to do is comment on their Instagram at Leadership of the Leaf, all one word, and they'll listen.
I'm on the Instagram page right now. There's a link in the bio. I can even email them.
You can also send them a private message and they'll respond to your query.
Queries? Did you just say queries? Does that mean question?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Well, good. I have a few queries about cigars and a few about leadership.
Well, that's great. I can't wait for the next episode.
Check me out, guys, on Instagram at Flavor King with two G's on there. And it's been a pleasure listening to Leadership of the Leaf here with Dice and Austin.
All right, welcome back from that quick little break. Before the break, we were talking, sharing stories, swapping a little bit about our new cigar smokers, maybe a first-time cigar smoker, what we did to help educate them, differences that we kind of saw. But before we left off, Dice, I asked you what your second, third tasted like.
And I said, after the break, I'll tell you, and it's after the break, and I'm going to tell you.
Oh.
That's how that works.
Weird.
Cocoa and coffee. I can still get some of that slight sweetness of the nuttiness, but definitely forefront of cocoa and coffee.
Nice. So mine is a wood and toffee.
Ooh.
Yeah, with a little bit of like a spiced bread on the back. It's got like a I want to say
monkey bread.
Kind of. It's just got like a thickness, like a chewiness to it that reminds me of bread, but it's spiced. Mm. It's interesting. It's very interesting. I'm thoroughly enjoying the cigar.
All right. It's McAuliffe. McAuliffe. I remember smoking a McAuliffe Black, I think it was, and it was amazing. Anyway, I need to pick up what you're smoking, though. I need to pick that one up.
Mm. Yeah. By the way, these flavors are kind of intermelding. I'm looking forward to this final third.
All right. You want to build some trust?
I think we should build a little bit of trust between us and our listeners here.
I will say, as a leader, any kind of leadership form that you're in, building trust is very important. It should not be overlooked. You should always look to build that trust.
Yeah. It's like you got a question, right? So how long would you continue business with somebody that you don't or even can't trust? How long, better off, how long would you keep a friend that you can't trust?
Yeah, that's how important that is, because if you can't look at a basketball team. You ever play basketball with someone and you're like, they never pass that guy the ball?
Yeah.
Like, why aren't they passing him the ball? Because no one on the team trusts him.
Right. Or you know, it's just like, you trust when you pass the ball so where they're not even there yet, right? And they go cut and they grab the ball and they do a layup or whatever. And you're like, oh man, they have so much trust right there, because he trusted that, you know, he's going to throw the ball and that motherfucker's going to be there to catch it and put the ball in. Or even football teams where the quarterback's throwing 40 yards down the field. That motherfucker can't see them anymore. They have fucking 4'6", 250, 300-pound fucking linemen coming at them, and they're like, I'm going to chuck this ball up, and if he's running the route he should, it should be right about there.
That's trust, sir.
That is trust.
But figuring out how to trust someone can also be important to being trustworthy yourself. Unfortunately, times have changed, my good friend. Long has gone away the trustworthy of a handshake.
That's true.
Yeah. So like,
I gave you my word.
Yeah. 40 years ago, your word meant something, right? All I have in this world is my word and my balls, and I don't break them for anyone.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. That time has changed.
Fuck.
Yes. Unfortunately.
Well, shit.
Generation, what? Y? X? No, not X. What's the newest one?
There's Gen Z out there.
Yeah, thanks, Gen Z.
I'd think it was, all right. We'll go with them.
Okay, good. I was saving you. I was saving you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. What is trust? What are we talking about? What are we talking about? What do you mean by trust?
Trust is being able to have a sense of security and confidence when dealing with somebody. Having that ability to predict how someone's going to act, if they're going to act in a specific way and be dependable, or earning a level of credibility that has built up over time, right? Just like the wide receivers running routes. If they run that same route and that quarterback throws the ball, you know that motherfucker's going to be there. If he's not there, the defense has held him up, or something has happened. If they're not there like they should be, that's why you see all these interceptions or missed throws, and they're like, oh, those two weren't on the same page. Well, maybe they ran the wrong route, or maybe the quarterback threw the wrong ball, or just was shittily not accurate. I don't know. Ask Dak Prescott. He just lost. What?
What? Who? I'm not a football guy. Sorry.
Cowboys quarterback, sir.
Oh man, I've been saying that all day. Not all day, not today, but after the game. Hey, we them boys. I didn't get the same energy. I don't know what happened.
Weird.
Before the game, people was yelling it all over the streets.
Weird.
After the game, it's weird. Yeah. I mean, a high level of trust creates a more positive employee experience. Just like your football here. I mean, the crowd goes wild if someone catches that shit, right?
Yeah.
This also leads to a more productive workplace where people feel safe and respected. I mean, the end zone is very safe, very respected.
Yeah. I mean, if you are like, if you're trying to run a business and, you know, Billy says, trust me, I'm going to get that report done today. And you're like, all right, I'm going to trust that you're going to get it done. And then he doesn't deliver. Now you look like an asshole. Right? Not Billy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you personally, the boss.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh my god, fucking Billy.
Oh jeez. All right. So that leads us to the trust equation.
Now we're gonna do math.
I'm gonna fucking take you to school.
That's what I say to you on the court, son.
Well, we ain't on the court, motherfucker. You can't. All right. You can't even dunk on me.
That's true. I don't know if I can lay up anymore. What's this trust equation about? Is math? We're doing math?
Yeah. So credibility plus reliability plus intimacy. Intimacy.
Yeah.
All over self-orientation equals trust.
Wow.
Which means the amount of trust that a person has would be based on your credentials plus your actions connected with your integrity plus how safe you make them feel. All of those items on top of our attention and focus.
All right. So my credentials, pretty much my resume.
Yep.
Well, how long have you been doing this? With my integrity, how honest are you about this? And how safe I make you feel? Be like, I think that sounds right. That's okay. I can do that.
Right.
Over my attention and focus. So if I'm paying attention to what's going on with all that above it, then all that equals trust.
Right. So let's use this in an example, right? The used car salesman.
Yeah, I trust that guy.
They have the credentials. I've been doing this for 15 years.
And yeah, we've been in business for 20 years. Yep.
Yep. Got it. I have, you got to somewhat take them at the word. I've been doing this for 20 years. And I have always had good customers. Okay. How do they make you feel? Well, if they're a slick back car dealer and they don't give you a good feeling, you're not going to trust them no matter what. This dude's pulling the wool over my eyes. He's a snake oil salesman. Even if he gives you attention and focus, if you don't have that intimacy, if you don't have how connected your actions are and how they make you feel, you're not going to have that trust.
None. You using that analogy, I've actually been to a car dealership. We was looking to purchase a car. It was going to happen, but the car salesman wasn't paying enough attention to our needs. Wasn't focused on the attention to detail of what we were looking for. So he lost the sale because we walked away.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I wanted the car. Don't get that wrong. I wanted it, but it didn't happen.
Right. I love a good salesman. I love a good sales pitch. If they're a great salesman, I sit there all day and I'll eat it up. I'm like, you know what the fuck you're talking about. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you got this dude just giving you a sales pitch and you're like, you're a piece of shit. I already tell. I don't even want to fucking buy from you anymore. I don't even know why I'm sitting here at this dealership anymore. It's like the same people who try to sell you into timeshares. You want it, right? 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 You want this? You want it? You give me an uneasy feeling. I don't trust you for shit.
Yeah, they kind of answer the questions for you.
Yeah.
You go on vacation a lot, right? Yeah, of course you do. Well, yeah, I guess.
No, nope. Sure. No, I go on vacation once every 3 years. Yeah, that's a lot. No, it's not.
No. Trust has a yin-yang feel to it, a yin-yang method about it, because there's kind of two parts to it. If you really think about the trust, there's a practical and emotional aspect to it. The practical is showing up for work, showing up for practice like your football guy, getting the work done, actually running your routes, doing the training like your football guy, and meeting deadlines like, okay, practice is at this time and we're going to work out for 3 hours, and he's actually there doing it for the 3 hours he met his deadline. Essentially, is the practical portion is being reliable.
Yeah.
Like, I see the wide receiver. He's doing everything. I really feel like he's reliable.
You always hear it. They're putting in that work.
Yeah. Okay. If you want to be straight about it. Yeah. And then there's
what they say.
This emotional part as well is feeling respected. Like, this wide receiver, is he respected? Is he generally listening? Is he a generous listener? To like the plays that are coming out? Is he networking? Is he hooking up with like the blockers and everything? Like, is he really networking? Essentially, is that person building a bond with everything? So those two intertwine for a yin yang twist of trust. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Why you look lost? What are you doing?
I'm not lost.
Okay.
Not lost at all.
My trust is broken.
Yes. I got My credibility has been shattered.
I got there. I got there. You motherfucker.
All right. So let's break down. There's about 10 pillars to help build trust. We're going to run through these relatively quickly because they're kind of self-explanatory.
Right.
So you got to value long-term relationships, be honest, honor your commitments, admit when you're wrong, communicate effectively, be vulnerable, be helpful, show people that you care, stand up for what's right, and be transparent.
Man, these sound vaguely familiar.
Weird. Wonder where we've heard these before.
I don't know, but I mean, if you look, they're all intertwined to a big portion of leadership, and it keeps coming back up only because, fuck, that's how you do leadership. This is part of leadership, this whole thing, if you put it all together. So these 10 pillars, the first one is what? Value long-term relationships?
Yes.
So trust requires long-term thinking. I know a lot of times when I'm at a new spot or I'm starting a new gig or whatever, a lot of times I'll talk to the people that's been there, the old heads, I call them, the ones that have been there for like 20 years. Like, hey, you remember when they did this or you know how they do that? Because that person's been there, done that, and he's got the T-shirt. I kind of value his long-term commitment to the actual job itself. So with that, I'm asking him so I can build that long-term relationship with someone that has been on a job for a long period of time.
Yeah, it might seem convenient in the moment to blame someone else or to make decisions that benefit you in the short term, but in the long term, it's going to end up hurting you, right? Your credibility is going to be damaged. People are going to realize that they can't rely on you to hold your word.
Especially if you try to point the finger very early, like you're the effing new guy, right? So
yeah,
now is a good time to ask those type of questions. Don't point the blame yet. Don't do that.
Don't do that. I mean, people will show you grace if you're the new person. But if you just sit there and you're like, you're the new guy and you fucked up and you go, nah, that guy did it. Everyone's going to be like, nah, that dude's been here for like 15 years. He knows how to fill out this fucking expense report. I'm going to guess that it was you, motherfucker.
Yeah, I mean, at least to the next pillar, like just be honest.
Right.
Fucking honest. Develop a reputation as someone who is dishonest is one of the fastest ways to erode your trust. Like, I catch you in a lie once, maybe catch you in a lie twice. But actually, you worked for me before. If I catch you in a lie the first time, you're pretty much dead to me. I don't believe anything you tell me anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes forever to try to build that trust back if you get caught in a lie. I've actually been trying to teach my son about that. About first impressions and you know, how trying to be honest, because it's almost impossible to, you know, to get back trust. So really, you should always tell the truth, even if it's awkward or it sucks or you might get in trouble. Just don't give people an opportunity to catch you in a lie, because it's going to turn out worse for you. It always will turn out worse for you. Somebody will find out and you're going to end up getting caught. Even if you think you got away with it, then that's just going to make you bolder for the next time. And then you're going to get caught up in a lie and they're going to go back going, well, maybe that motherfucker, if he's lying about this, maybe he lied about that thing, like, you know, 2 months ago. Fuck. So yeah. If you're just honest and you're like, hey, I fucked up the expense report, they're going to be, all right, don't do it again. Here's how you do it. Here's your training. Like, all right, cool. Got it. And then, you know, somebody else, and they're like, hey, I did not fuck up that expense report. I don't know what happened, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, all right, that motherfucker tells the truth. So who else here is a liar? That motherfucker. Tiffany, you fucking liar.
Yeah. Well, I often say, which lie do you want me to believe? You lied to me so many times already. I don't know if you... I'm telling the truth, Dice. I swear. I don't know. Are you?
I don't know. Being honest helps you basically to honor your commitments, which leads to the third pillar. A trustworthy person does everything in their power to stick to the agreements that they've made. If you make a promise, you have to follow through. And you should avoid promises that you're not going to be able to keep. Don't sit there, and I tell this to my wife all the time. My wife's like, oh, just tell your son you'll be at this thing. And I'm like, I can't. Because I don't know if I actually can. I don't want to tell him that I'm going to be somewhere and then not show up and him be like, well, I thought dad was going to be here. And it has nothing to do with me. I could have just been stuck at work and unable to get away. But I'm not going to sit there and tell him I will be there, count on me, and then not have control over that.
Yeah, you, I hate Hollywood or TV or whatever. You see it all the time in movies and stuff where the kid is playing soccer and he looks up and see the empty seat. And he's like, dad said he was going to be here. And then they lose the game and he's all upset. And then he does drugs and that's the end of the movie. It happens all the time like that. So you don't want to.
What are you watching, the Hallmark Channel?
You don't want to be that person, exactly how you said. So always try to keep your commitments the best you can. If you can't keep your commitment, like, I promise I'll be there this time, like, follow through and, like, contact the person. Let them know that you did everything you could in your power. There was a train, there was a plane crash.
You got a flat tire. Shit happens. I get it. But, you know, and that's why I don't ever tell somebody I will be there unless I know that I can absolutely 100% make it.
Right.
I will go, hey, buddy, I'm going to do everything in my power to try to be there. I will try to my damnedest to be there. But there's a good chance that I may have to work because of X, Y, and Z. So I will do everything I can to be there, but don't 100% count on me.
Right, because you want to do the next pillar. You want to admit when you're wrong. Because people don't like to hear excuses. I had a flat tire. A plane crashed in front of my car. Nobody wants to hear these excuses. They just want you there.
Right.
Right? So if you do something wrong, it's best just to be upfront about it.
If you realize you're incorrect about something, just own up to it. Hey, you fucked up this expense report. Did I? Are you sure? They're like, yeah, see right here. You fucking forgot to carry the one. Ah, fuck. My bad. 100% my bad. I was fat fingering something. I was doing three things at once. 100% my bad. Won't happen again. All right. You know, hey, yeah, 100%. Got it. Being vulnerable enough to admit your fault can humanize you and make you appear more trustworthy. Well, admitting mistakes is also part of being honest.
Yeah. When I first read it, it made me think of, like, you watched that documentary on Jordan. Like, oh, he doesn't make mistakes. He's not human. Or even with Kobe, I've heard him say about that too. That's because he appears flawless. He doesn't really make mistakes, right?
Mm.
So if he did make a mistake, would he admit it?
I think Jordan probably would have. I think he did in Last Dance.
Oh, where he punched Steve Kerr?
Yeah, he's like, that was me. I was wrong about that. I'm sorry. But then he also is like, and I took that personally.
But I mean, even with him saying that, it kind of humanized him a little bit, because a lot of people think he's like greater than life, like, oh my God, is my, but yeah, he makes mistakes.
Yeah, everybody makes mistakes. To be able to, you know, to admit to making mistakes, you have to be able to communicate effectively. Trust can easily be damaged by miscommunication, so you should try your best to communicate in a way that doesn't leave room for misinterpretation. I always ask, especially with my son, who's, you know, 5-year-old, do you understand everything that I just told you? Can you repeat back to me what I said to you?
Yes.
Yeah, as you're shaking your head, no. And a lot of times I go, hey, what did I just say? If I do this, and I'm going to be in trouble, and I'm going to get grounded from X, Y, or Z. And I'm like, okay, so you understand that if you do what you were planning on doing currently, you are going to be wrong and you're going to get in trouble. Yes, I do. Okay. I just want to make sure you understand you will get in trouble. Yep. Got it. Goes off and does it anyways. Now he's in trouble. And I go, did I not tell you? You did. You told me I was going to get in trouble and you did it anyways, huh? Yeah. So now you're in trouble. Yeah. How does it feel? Bad. Okay.
Well, it's good that you was listening, because listening is just as important as speaking for effective communication.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if you aren't sure about something, maybe ask questions to clarify.
Yeah. Make sure that you give others a chance to actually talk.
What the fuck? Other people don't need a chance to talk. They just need to listen to what the fuck I tell them to do.
Well, clearly, if you do let them talk, it will show that you care.
I don't give a shit.
Generally, if you listen to a lot of people, I tend to do that sometimes, especially with, let's say the IT guy or something, right? Just let them ramble. Whatever. I'm listening to you, buddy.
Yeah.
It helps build that trust. It's one of those pillars that's going to help build that trust. Talk away.
You know
I have
what else
no
it,
idea.
You know what else it gets you?
What's that?
Favors with the IT guy.
I ask questions when I need.
Because who, you know who else that listens to them? Nobody. So you know what they end up doing? Fucking just bitching about everything. They're like, oh, I guess what, nobody listens to me. And I'm like, I listen to you, buddy. That's why I always reset your password to that first. Like, yeah, motherfucker. Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Oh, man. Are you being vulnerable?
100%. Being open about your emotions and showing some feelings can help with building trust. It shows that you care and that you are also a person. It humanizes you. Yeah. Don't be afraid to let coworkers know if something has upset you or stressed you out.
You don't need to, this one kind of needs to be approached a little carefully because you don't want to go telling your coworkers all your personal business. You don't want to get overly too personal with details. Like, my dog had diarrhea, you know, I mean, they probably don't care to hear. It's a little too deep. So level of emotional intelligence is needed to make sure that you aren't oversharing or undersharing. Begin by sharing gradually. Done correctly, opening up about your feelings can strengthen and a trusting relationship. So, you know, it feels like you're kind of letting them inside your inner circle a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if you start a job, you don't want to go day one, you're like, so last night, my wife was just puking her fucking guts out, and then I had to send this, she wanted to do this. And you're like, shut the fuck up. Why are you telling me this right now? I don't need to know about this personal detail of you. But if you've worked with somebody for 5 years and they know stuff about you, you've built a bond, you can be like, hey, last night my wife was puking her guts out, I didn't get to sleep, da da da. They're like, all right, man. If you need to knock off a little early, and you know, I got you. Like, oh man, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, there's a difference.
That would be helpful.
It would be helpful, which is the seventh pillar. Someone who's trustworthy will tend to go out of their way to help people if they can. Not because of some agenda or because they expect to get something out of it, but because they're genuinely a good person.
Like the guy saying that, hey, if you can just leave a little early to help out your wife, whatever, right? That's being helpful. That's being genuine. Maybe you've done all the work for the day and you could just sit at your desk and, you know, browse the internet or whatever. Or you could be helpful. If you know some coworkers struggling with their own workload, offer to help. Or ask a manager, is there something extra that can be done? There's so many times I've seen, like, someone is done with their work and then they kick their feet up and slap their hands and be like, you know what? I'm going to go hide somewhere.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? Why would you do that? You're a piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that motherfucker just gets his work done while, meanwhile, the rest of us are sitting there struggling. You could have had the exact same workload, and maybe that person is just a savant and has programmed their computer to take care of all their stuff automatically, and they just do it. Man, you could be helpful and sit there and say, hey, do you want to know an easier way to do that? Well, yeah, I'd love an easier way to do this. It takes up 6 hours, you know, 4 hours of my day. You're like, well, if you do these quick shortcuts, it takes you 30 minutes. Holy shit, I could get so much more work done during the day. You're welcome. Takes nothing from you, but they're like, holy, that saved me so much time. There's never any harm in giving guidance or advice to a new hire that seems overwhelmed. Or even somebody who's trying to use a new technology. Maybe you know, you're a technology person. You're like, I got this down pat. Maybe that older person, old head who's been there forever is like struggling with the new technology. You're like, hey, boss, let me help you out with that. Because if you do these three steps, it saves you like 2 hours. You're like, oh, shit. That is amazing.
I mean, it's unbelievable when you actually step in. I'm not trying to pick at the older generation or anything, but it's unbelievable when you step in and help someone out like that. Because it actually is showing people that you care. Which is also the eighth pillar, showing people that you care. People will naturally trust you more if they feel like you're truly interested in them, remembering little details like you know, the name of your coworker's child, or asking how their weekend was. And was it, you know, did you have a good weekend? What you do this weekend?
Yeah. Yeah. I came in to a new job recently. I've been here at my new job for about a year. And man, my coworkers, I saw them, you know, came back for after, you know, the vacation, the holidays or whatever. And the first thing they asked me, hey, how was your holiday? Did you and the wife and the kid do anything fun? Everybody have a good holiday? And yeah, actually, thank you. It was great. And I remembered, I was like, hey, how is your kid? Because they're an older, you know, they're older retired person, you know, just kind of working. They've already retired from one job. I'm like, hey, how's your granddaughter? How was her Christmas? Well, actually, yeah, her granddaughter's second Christmas was great. Thanks for asking. Like, oh, I'm so glad you got to spend some time with him. Boom. Hey, I care about you. You care about me. Makes a working relationship go round and round. You probably worked with somebody who seemed to be on their own, in their own little bubble. They didn't care about anyone else besides themselves. And you've also likely worked with somebody who was friendly and regularly checked in to see how you were doing. Which person did you find, our listeners, more trustworthy? Let us know. At Leadership of the Leaf on Instagram. Do you find the person who's off in their own little bubble more trustworthy, or the person who's like, hey, here's a Snickers bar, or hey, here's some, I brought donuts on a Friday. I know you had a bad week, you know, at work. I heard you had a bad week at work, so I brought you some donuts. Like, oh shit, dude. Thank you. That is awesome. Thank you so much.
100% absolutely correct. I would love to hear who, because when you gave that scenario, I had two in my head already. I'm like, of course I trust the other guy. Wait, why did the other guy bring donuts? Why do I trust that guy? What are you doing? What are you trying to butter me up for now?
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
Well, you know, so there's a guy in my office right now. He brings in donuts every Friday for people in the office. Every Friday, just out of the kindness of his heart. And I don't really know the guy, you know, if somebody was like, hey, do you trust him? I'd be like, I trust him to get his work done. I trust him to, if I had to ask for help, I trust that he'd help me out.
Yeah, I definitely feel more comfortable asking him for help than the guy that doesn't fucking talk.
Exactly. So even something as simple as remembering, you know, or saying someone's name could show you that you care. Hey, how's your wife, Jill? Huh. Oh shit, you remember?
Yeah. What? You know Jill?
how's your son Billy? Did his leg heal after that baseball injury?
Yeah, it's amazing how far that'll go. You definitely take people off their guard or their pedestal, sort of.
You immediately relax their defenses.
Correct. That's the word I was trying to say. Hey.
Yeah, hey, for you, bud.
Yeah. Another pillar that we're going to go through is stand up for what's right. And I think I do that a little too much sometimes. People respect honesty. Possible. So while some bosses may like yes men, yes people who agree with everything they say, the best leaders value insights and opinions. I often value myself when I was coming up in the leadership role is I didn't really say yes to a lot of things. So, like, no, wait, why would I say yes to that? I'm not just going to willingly say yes. Let's look at this. Let's assess the situation, get a better, you know, snapshot of what's going on instead of just saying yes, 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 yes.
So I have expanded upon that. I have turned into a yes if person. Because my boss is like, they like to hear the word yes, right? People like to hear the word yes.
Absolutely.
Right? Hey,
yeah.
Can you get this report done by the end of the day? Yes, if you pass all this other work off to somebody else. Because if you want me to focus on this, I could do that. But all this other work is going to suffer as a result, so I don't want to fail in this other work that you've assigned me, but I don't want to tell you that I just can't outright do this. I can do it if you take this off of me. So yes, if.
Okay. I see that. I do see this being more of
team player.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But if you value truly value honesty, then you're going to be that person that speaks up for the person who's getting stepped on in a meeting. You know, hey, I put this presentation together. It was me. I did this, and this is how I made it look, and this is what the animations I use, and aren't they great? Question. If you put that all together, then why does it say X, Y, and Z? Because I know for a fact that came from Tommy over there, because that's Tommy's project. Oh, well, and everyone just starts looking like, why? Well, why does it say that? Just curious. Just, you know, standing up for what's right.
Here's a little known fact. I don't know if you knew or know or not. Whenever I did slideshows or had to put a presentation together, there was dice throughout the slideshow somewhere. I know. You knew?
Motherfucker, really?
I'm just saying, I didn't know if you knew. I worked with so many people that did exactly what you said. It's like, that's my slideshow. What? No, I did this. Okay. Why is there a dice right here? Look at this. Look at this whole acronym here. It spells out dice. The first letter of everything says dice. Come on. You did that? Yeah. You can go kick a whole bag of rocks.
Right. Don't sacrifice your values and what you believe just to appease your manager or try to get ahead. This is going to decrease the trust with your coworkers. And eventually, it's going to decrease the trust with your manager or your boss or whoever you're trying to appease, because they're just going to be like, yeah, okay, yes, you say yes to everything, and that's great, but you're not standing up for anything. Like, you just, why'd you lead us into ruin? Well, I didn't. I was just agreeing with stuff that you said. You're right, but I was wrong. Why didn't you? And you knew I was wrong, so why'd you agree? Well, because I thought that's what you wanted. No, I needed somebody who tells me when I'm fucking wrong.
I need you to do your fucking job.
Right. So, you know, you got to stand up for what's right. The last pillar is to be transparent. So as long as you can explain what you're doing and why you're doing it, most people are going to be able to understand. If you can logically explain what you're doing and why, people are going to be like, oh, all right, that makes sense. Like, I've been out, when, you know, I used to live in Florida, and I've been putting the shutters on my windows. And I had a neighbor pull over, and they're like, why are you putting the shutters on your windows? I'm like, there's a hurricane in the Gulf that's potentially heading this way. So I'm doing this in preparation just in case it hits, because I don't want to have to do it later. Oh, shit. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Hey, why are you over here doing this report when you're supposed to be doing all this other work? Well, John asked me to do this report and said that other work is going to get done by these people because John, the CEO, wants this to get done today, and he asked me to do it. So that's why I'm doing it right now instead of my other work that you, Bill, assigned me. Oh, all right. Well, if CEO wants you to do it, then I guess you should do it. Got it. I will make sure I CC you on the copy up to the boss. Cool. Thanks.
One, because this is the pillar of trust. This pillar of trust is kind of overlooked in some aspects of the leadership role because of the sharing of information amongst all the figureheads in a certain aspect of a job. Because if only two people know what's going on, then the other three people are going to be lost. So you should be transparent and share as much information and knowledge as you can on a certain subject matter, such as your scenario of the CEO wants this report done. Like, if everyone in the higher up knew that that report needed to be done, then the guy wouldn't have came over and asked what she was doing.
Exactly.
Everybody was transparent about what needs to happen.
Yeah. I don't know how many times I've gotten a CEO walk by task, or when they're walking by asking how everyone's doing, they're like, oh, hey, by the way, Austin, can you pull this for me? And I want to know X, Y, and Z. And you're like, I'm like, yes, sir. I can knock it out for you. And they're like, all right, cool. And they walk off. I immediately go to my manager. Hey, by the way, just a heads up, this is coming your way because the big boss asked me to do it. All right, cool. Well, let me know. And I'll, CC me on it. I'll send it up to him. Can do. Just wanted to give you a heads up that this was asked for. All right, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, all 10 of those pillars together, if you was actually to stack them up and you was to build your Coliseum with these pillars, you're just going to build nothing but a super strong foundation for trust. And that is a great aspect to start off for any leader, no matter which role you're in that leadership spot.
Yeah, trust is the most critical factor of success for a leader, in my personal opinion, or really for any business or relationship. You know, marriages are built on trust. Just think about like Wells Fargo, for instance, recently. You know, they had that big thing where they were found to be opening accounts in their customers' names without the customers' knowledge. And they got caught doing it and were fined and everything else. Well, they've lost a crap ton more business now because of that, because they were not trustworthy with their clients' personal information.
Yeah. Totally lost credibility.
Yeah.
As I like to say, building trust is a Disney must-do for any leadership role. Disney must-do.
Yeah.
What a Disney must-do is, right?
Yeah, you got to do it.
You go to Disney, it's something you have to do.
Right.
Like you have to ride this ride.
Right. You got to get a turkey leg.
It's a Disney must-do. You have to.
Yeah, you gotta eat. You gotta eat the Mickey ice cream.
Yes, again, another Disney must do.
Yeah.
All right. I just want to make sure that one, our listeners understand what a Disney must do is.
Got it.
I know you know. We've been to Disney together. I know you know.
Yes. Realize though that even if you do all 10 of these pillars, you do everything right, trust does not happen overnight. Leadership and frankly business success starts with trust.
Right. Just like Wells Fargo. I mean, you're not going to go at the height of them getting caught with everything that was going on. You're not going to open a bank account with them. Like, oh, I just read this in the news. Let me go open up a bank account with Wells Fargo. Said no one ever.
Yeah. Right. Like, I mean, look, Enron, right? They went out of business.
For some of you younger folks, you might want to Google that.
If you don't know what Enron is or who Enron is, you're almost too young to be listening to this podcast.
Maybe. I don't know.
Fuck.
Maybe you had your head in the sand. I don't know.
That makes me feel old.
Someone the other day said their mom did not let them listen to Eminem. I was like, oh my God, that made me feel like stupid old. Like, what? All right, whatever.
Yeah. 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 Trust is a huge thing. It's huge. There's so many instances of businesses losing the faith of their consumers and potentially going out of business because of that. Trust is a huge thing that you have to get right.
And now, Austin, I have a question.
You know what I have to get right?
Your final third?
Yeah. See, nice. I'm going to teach you how to do segues properly one of these days.
Wait. Before we go to your final third. All right. I want listeners to know something. There's a little known secret about leadership of the Leaf. Austin doesn't even know this secret. All right. You remember season 2, we had the episode about the spittoon, like the spitting?
Yes.
Like cigar and the saliva and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And we was bantering about the spittoon. You was like, you should have that spittoon sound, pating. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. And I said, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do that. Then I was like, oh, you know what? Okay, I'll do it 2 times. I said one time, then I was like, okay, 2.
Uh-huh.
There's 2 spittoon noises in that episode.
Well, aren't you a peep?
So there you go. There's an Easter egg. To go back to, if you listen to it and you didn't hear it, go back again, listen to it one more time. Let me know. Leadership of the Leaf, at Leadership of the Leaf at Instagram. Let me know if you heard the spittoon noise.
Aren't you?
There's 2 of them. There's 2 of them. All right. Final third.
So this final third is interesting because I'm getting a sense of like charred wood. But it's mixed with sweet cream, coffee, and black pepper. It's not cedar. It's like charred like oak or wood or something. But there's a creaminess and a sweetness to it. And then like a little bit of black pepper on the end.
I know exactly what you're getting at. Because at the end of mine, I'm getting all the... It's weird for me because I'm getting all the natural flavors that you normally would get at the beginning of the cigar. I'm getting at the end of the cigar. I'm getting that natural notes of tobacco, that natural notes of the woodsy like flavor profile that you're describing, not on the cedar side, but the actual wood side. But because I know it's on fire and I can get the smoke, it's like a smoky natural tobacco wood with black pepper.
Nice. All right, so now it's time to know, is it single, five pack, or box worthy?
It's time to answer the question. Is a cigar box worthy, five pack, or just one or two?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and start off on that. I would say mine would be a five pack. It's not a single, it's not one or two. I find it interesting enough to keep, but I don't find it overbearing enough or over like, I can't wait to have this again and again and again and again. So I wouldn't call it a box worthy, but it's definitely I want to say the barber pole helped out in this aspect because it, you know, it changes every now and again. It's worthwhile to have a five pack in there just because it's so different and it's not just a one note, one trick pony.
Okay. I can get behind that. For this McAuliffe, I would agree with you. It's a five pack for sure. It's definitely more than a one or two. Unfortunately, I only have one. Yes, I know. I broke the cardinal rule. Got it. I just don't see me. I don't see me liking the cigar enough to sit there and go, I'm going to buy a box so I can smoke it more and more and more. But I wanted enough to have it around and have the option because normally I keep five packs and when I'm out of a five pack, I just go buy another one.
right.
Right. But I don't want to smoke it often enough to justify a box.
All right. I'm still going to get it to try it, of course.
Yeah.
Well, we jumped on some pillars to help build trust. Pillars, building trust. Get it? Got it. Okay. And we talked about some new cigar smokers and some of the things new cigar smokers kind of do and tend to ask questions about.
Yeah. Yeah, some of our experiences. Let us know if you guys have had any different experiences with new cigar smokers. Because I'd be interested to know, you know, what is everybody else's? You know, what was your new cigar experience like when you first got into cigars? Did you have somebody there to help you? If they did you ask similar questions? Or maybe you get to help somebody out and did you help answer their questions?
If you have a very funny one, please let me know. I want to laugh. I like laughing.
That's not you. All right. Until next time, I'm Austin.
And I'm going to stay dice.
And remember, great leaders smoke great cigars.
Yeah, they do.
Thank you for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. The comments and opinions expressed by the host and guests does not reflect the opinions of those that broadcast this show, nor does it reflect any of our affiliates.